Welcome to Amanita Minute, a podcast focused on maternal wellness and motherhood. The saying goes, it takes a village. At Ama & Co., we're focused on our mothers, and a crucial portion of that includes armoring our villagers to help our mothers. This village puts the co in Ama & Co., and I know I couldn't do it without my village. If you're a support person or an expecting mom who is looking to build out her community, this episode is for you. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Amanita Minute Podcast. Today, we have a special guest, my husband, Jing. We're sitting together in our dining room, and we have poured 2 glasses of red wine from a winery we visited in California years ago. And so we're ready to get started. So, Jing.
Hello.
It is Monday night.
It is.
On a scale of 1 to 5, how crazy was this evening?
It's okay. We had HelloFresh for dinner.
This is not sponsored.
Which made it easier. Mm-hmm. The kids were okay.
Pretty good.
Got a slightly later start to the evening because we toured the new daycare facility after picking the kids up together. A little bit hectic because I was still mentally transitioning out of work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just dealing with that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of just how life is, I think, these days. But you know what? I was thinking about it, and it's kind of fun telling your really young kids about how your work day was.
He asked you in the car.
I know. It's kind of fun, like, thinking through how you want to filter the details, but still, you know, tell them about your day.
Yeah.
Like, I remember with my parents, I wouldn't really talk much about how their work day was. So mm-hmm. It's kind of nice being able to do it, even just with our kids being 3 and 1.
Yeah. I think it's important because I read an article one time about how kids pick up on everything. And if you portray work as this like ominous thing that you have to do that you really don't like, then they get actually anxious about it. And then they don't want to work when they're older because they just see that it really drags you down, makes you unhappy.
I could see that.
So I think it's important we talk about it, and then we also talk about the good things at work.
And they're surprisingly interested. Like Harry is surprisingly interested about how my good or bad days go at work.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's kind of fun. It's kind of interesting to think about.
I think he thinks all I do at work is take the train, take the subway, get ice cream or cupcakes, and then I come home. I think that's his like rendition of my day.
You go into a really tall building.
Yeah.
On a train, which he cares more about than the building.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, let's back up a little bit. And I'd love for you to share with everyone how we met.
Sure. So we met in the summer of 2008. Mm-hmm. It was very platonic initially. We were both in an internship program. And yeah, that's how we met. But then about a year and a half, 2 years later, we had an intern reunion. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think our platonic relationship became unplatonic.
Okay. But talk about the courtship era.
Sure. Yeah. I found you really easy and fun to talk to. Obviously, I was physically attracted to you at first, which, you know, made me want to talk to you more and learn more about you. And yeah, it was like an intern reunion, right? So we were just all catching up about what we were up to, life after college. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just became kind of one of those people that I really enjoyed talking with, both in person and online.
Do you remember the first time we hung out, what we did?
I think I don't know if this was the very first time, but I think one night I was doing something with friends and you were doing something with friends and we met up at a bar. But that could have been after we were hanging out in other
I don't
contexts.
Remember this.
Okay, well, the other memory I have of our early continental.
No, I do remember this because
your bestie
said something to me and I was like, I'm not from Brooklyn. Like he said something like, oh, you're the girl from Brooklyn. And I was
Jeremy?
No, I'm not.
and it was because we walked to the Brooklyn Bridge. So I think he got the stories mixed up.
Oh, yes. Like, I did tell him.
I'm not from Brooklyn. And
then, okay, so I guess we did. Okay, fine. So I guess we did a few things before that.
So our first, I'll tell you, our first hangout.
We did restaurant week.
Yes.
At Megu.
Yes.
Yes.
See? And we split the check.
Yeah,
because it was platonic.
Well, that was the verge of unplatonic.
No, it wasn't. We split the check.
The verge. I was still making up my mind.
Anyway, if any of my friends are listening, you remember the slow as molasses movement in our relationship. Anyway, I guess 12, 13 years?
Yeah.
No?
No.
12 years.
Yes.
12 years later, we live in this home with two rugrats. Okay, so did you always want to have kids?
Yes, of course.
Of course. Well, not everyone likes kids or wants kids, so what
about, I suppose.
What about kids?
Did I won't you, judge why those did, people.
Why do you want kids? Why do you want, why did you want kids?
Because they're cool.
Okay.
Because just makes life interesting.
Yeah. How did you know it was time for us to have kids?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the different chapters of our professional careers kind of lined up, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously we wanted to have kids after getting married.
Yeah.
Not before.
Some people also
no judgment to those who go the other way, but like mm-hmm. obviously I had it in my mind that I was going to find someone I wanted to marry and have kids with them. So that had to happen. And then you were finishing your MBA, mm-hmm. part-time MBA, and that was taking up a lot of your time. So it kind of made sense that you were finishing that. And then what was I up to? I guess I had spent the first 8-9 years of my career at IBM, and I left to pursue a few other interesting kind of career directions. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was just kind of time. Didn't want to like necessarily wait for my career side to settle down. Mm-hmm. Saw that there was an opportunity because you had finished school. Mm-hmm. And then in my head, when I was kind of thinking through it, like this was well before we got married, I was kind of thinking, well, it'd be nice to get married around 28 years old and kind of have kids like leading into my 30s.
Wow. So you wanted kids right away. Well, you're getting married at 28, you're having kids into your 30s. That means you start pretty much a year after.
Yeah. So that I guess. Yeah, so that obviously that didn't happen. So in the back of my head, subconsciously, I probably felt like it was already a little bit late, later than I had imagined having kids. But obviously, you know, we got married, found a nice house, moved in, right? That was kind of just different chapters of things that you would kind of want in place right, before starting a family. You finished your school and then...
But you're actually amongst the first of... your closer friend group, minus like James, who had kids.
Yeah. Well,
so that's why I'm surprised you think it's like that we were late, because actually amongst
I'm from the South, and in the South, you get married and have kids a little sooner than people in the North.
Okay. So we decide we're going to try to get pregnant. Can you describe that process from a male perspective?
Exciting at first, then laborious. Because I think it took both of us longer than we thought to actually get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So exciting became laborious. Trying to figure out how to like, you know, hit that sweet spot time period each month to actually make it happen, right?
Yeah.
And then obviously I learned a few things along the way. Like probably shouldn't spend so much time in a steam room after working out at the gym. Different things to increase your odds.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I thought that you learn all this stuff in like sex ed back in elementary school, middle school, and you think you can just get pregnant super easy. And I think some people probably do, but not everybody. Mm. So you have this perception that it'll be really easy.
Yeah.
And I guess at least with Harry, it wasn't that way. Like as hard as other people either. Yeah. So I feel fortunate. We were lucky to not have complications.
Yeah.
It's just that it took us like more tries than we thought we needed.
Yeah.
So that was interesting, you know?
Yeah. And I think the fact that everyone has that perception that it's fast, it just makes it feel even longer when you don't get pregnant within like 2 months. Then you're like, all right, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah. And then if you start seeing like your friends get pregnant and stuff like that, you just feel like you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
But I mean, all in all, like, how long was it? We tried 5-6 months. That was it.
Yeah.
So in the grand scheme of things, like, it's actually not that long.
Yeah.
But I think when we were in the middle of it, it felt long.
Right.
Especially because in my head, I was like, boom, baby at 29:30, right?
Yeah.
So it felt long for multiple reasons.
Yeah. What was important for you once we found out we were pregnant?
What was important for me?
What was the priorities of, like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the traditional male role, like I thought I needed to make sure I could, you know, more than provide for the family financially. Mm-hmm. So I think I found myself mentally thinking about that more. Mm-hmm. Even though I, you know, you could argue I left a more stable job, which probably made me think about it more. But anyway, like that was one aspect of it. I think maybe the other was just, you know, trying to like just make sure I could do different things and do my part to kind of make you feel like you were having a good experience, like health-wise with the baby.
Mm-hmm. How did it feel to see my body change?
Pretty cool. Yeah. Pretty cool. I didn't know your, like your abs would split.
Yeah.
And like all these different physical changes beyond just like, you know, you gain a little bit of weight and you start having a bigger belly with a moving baby inside.
Do you,
pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you remember when I got the pregnancy pillow?
Oh boy. Yeah. There's certain accessories.
So for context, for anyone listening, we have a queen size bed and the pregnancy pillow I got was a U-shaped, really large pillow, pretty much adds like twice the
pretty much another body mass of another me. Full-grown adult in bed in the shape of a pillow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you can go for the wedge pillow, maybe that's more helpful, but I went for the full U-shaped horseshoe.
Do you think it actually helped enough? A lot.
It did. Yeah. It makes a big difference. It made a big difference for me towards the end.
Yeah. I remember you definitely appreciating it towards the end.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, it's just like an extra adult in bed.
Yeah. But also, you're supposed to sleep on your side very late into your pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
So that pillow forced me to stay on my side a little bit more.
Okay.
Versus me rolling onto my back or whatever throughout the night. Do you remember the first doctor's appointment we had with Harry? I'm sorry, with Harry in my belly, I mean.
That was the one you had the ultrasound?
Yeah. Like
the first one?
The one they first confirmed.
Yeah. It was like amazing that early into the pregnancy, I could hear the heartbeat so clearly. Mm-hmm. And it was like, yeah, there's like this whole nother like living life form. And it was like so cute too, because they took a picture of Harry. And he's like literally just like a gummy bear.
You know,
like, look like a gummy bear.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really cool. It was a really... you know, touching experience for me.
I think I've alluded to this a lot in previous episodes, but in terms of my labor and delivery, I was able to have the birth I wanted, which was natural and without any intervention, so no epidurals. And I'm curious of your take on how we got to that stage, how we got to that decision, and how we made it through labor and delivery.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we both kind of had it in our heads that like, if it's not needed, do you really need to give birth using all of these like tools and medicines and processes? Or if you could do it, like, why not just try to do it as simply as possible?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was like a few different stories we read about where, you know, things that you agree to do in the hospital, if you're not prepared, it can kind of lead into outcomes that you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So when we kind of like talked about it, one, I was like, okay, it's really cool that you want to try to do this like natural birth and no interventions and no epidural and all of that. And then I was thinking about it in my head, I was like, well, you're the one going through it. So it sounds nice on paper that we're going to try to do it this way, but like, you're going to ultimately like face the brunt of the, you know, the physical effort.
What were some of the things that you remember we did to prepare for it?
Yeah, I mean, we read some things. We went to a few classes. We went to kind of like a natural yoga class, kind of give it was like a yoga studio, right? Mm-hmm. It was like a birthing class at a yoga studio. Then we also did like the standard like nurse led one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from all of that, I think we both got a better appreciation for like all the different stages of giving birth. So kind of like mentally, we were prepared for it. Like we knew kind of what we wanted, like what to look for. And then like for the guy, well, for the partner in the relationship that's not the one giving birth, like there was like these things that you could actually do, which was nice for me. Like you could help facilitate like a good breathing practice from the beginning of like contractions and your water breaking all the way through to delivery. There's like all these different like pain management techniques that you can do. So yeah, I guess I embraced kind of those different things I could do on the day of. And I think we both found it to be pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to recall a short version of a labor and delivery story?
Yeah, it was like late at night. Your water broke. A few days early, not super early, but a few days early. And I think what we talked about was, let's try to stay nice and relaxed, let things progress, because I think your contractions were not that strong yet. And, you know, maybe like normally someone whose water just broke, like you might be thinking, oh, I got to go to the hospital right away. But I think for us, we were like, okay, it's probably still a little early because your contractions aren't that close together yet. They're not that strong. So I think we tried to like sleep a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we tried, but then we stayed home, which I think was a little bit more relaxing than going to like, you know, kind of like a sterile hospital setting. And we made it through the night, even though you didn't get that much sleep. And then it wasn't until like later mid-morning that we decided to finally check into the hospital because, you know, things were like progressing more and more. Yeah. And then we got to the hospital. I went out to go grab some food, came back a little late. Your contractions were already getting really strong. And I think up to that point, I was mainly just like kind of helping you like keep a breathing pattern going.
Yeah.
But then at that point, when your contractions were really strong, I used some of the like the pain management techniques. Like one was like kind of squeezing your glutes and hip area to kind of, you know, open up that pelvic cavity as like Harry was literally passing through it to alleviate some of the pain. And it was cool to see like some of that actually working.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was really, really cool to see that, you know, just a few simple things that the partner can do can actually alleviate pain. And yeah, I mean, like I just recall that it almost seemed like everyone was like about to push the baby out at the hospital at the same time. Like there was a few other mothers there. So like literally I had to take a more active role in the last stages of actually giving birth. Like I was like literally holding one of your legs and the other nurse was holding the other leg. And then you were like, I'm ready to start pushing. And I think the doctor was still in some other delivery room.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was literally a nurse that day.
Did they try to tell me not to push?
They were trying to wait till the doctor came.
Okay.
Right? Like the nurses were like kind of thinking, I think, I'm going to hold her legs, but hopefully the baby doesn't like literally fly out because there's no one to catch it.
Okay. So, I didn't know because they told me to wait, but I was like, no, I'm going to push because it's like, he's coming, he's forcing his way out and it just hurt. Like the more you hold him in, the more it actually hurts at that point.
Yeah.
So.
And like, I think around the peak of your contraction intensity and, you know, I'm sure pain that you were feeling, I think you were like, okay, just give me the epidural. But by that time it was too late because they concluded that it was already way too progressed. There was no point. Yeah. So
I think for me, so what I remember asking for it, because I thought I was only halfway there at that time.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I had gone from 5 to like 9 or 8, whatever I was, so quickly.
Yeah,
so
your final progression was really fast.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it was. And once they told you that, I think you were like, okay.
Yeah.
Like this.
Well, I remember the doctor just coming in and being like, okay, so we're going to get a baby now. And I was like, what? Because I was like, I was still waiting for still thinking the epidural was going to come. And
right.
Instead, he's like, so we're getting a baby now. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. So, you know, to me in the moment, I was like, oh, cool. So all that pain management like got us through all the way till you were pretty much ready to push Harry out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was still like holding her leg. The other nurse was holding her other leg, you know, you gave a few really good pushes and boom.
What does that even look like? The pushing? Because I didn't look and I didn't have a mirror and I didn't want to know. But I'm curious, like, what does the pushing look like? How do you know I was pushing?
Yeah, you could literally see Harry's head coming out.
Oh, so weird.
You know, hair and all.
Did you think you were going to look?
Did I think I was going to look?
Yeah.
Of course I was going
to
look.
Some people don't want to.
I know.
Some people are on the other side, of, like by the head, supporting that way.
Yeah.
But you knew you wanted to be on the other side.
Well, I was on your side, but I could see everything happening.
Yeah.
I wasn't I wasn't near your head or like on the catching side because that was where the doctor was.
Yeah.
But I saw everything.
Great.
Yeah.
How did you feel while it was going on? Were you like, this is a really cool science project?
No, I mean, it was cool and really intense for the last few minutes.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know, like, are you going to be able to push them out? And lo and behold, you did. So great work.
How did his birth and Wesley's birth differ?
Wesley's was much longer, right? And it was not as straightforward, like your water didn't break right away.
Yeah.
And we were in the hospital longer, and their policy was that you like literally couldn't eat normal food, even
That's
though you were
policy before too.
I know, but you were in there much longer.
Yeah.
So the concern for me was, are you going to have enough energy to actually push Wesley out because you're in the hospital longer and you haven't had, you know, any decent food other than like, I think I still snuck you like a few chips and a few like French fries and maybe a bite of my hamburger.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it was different, but like, again, like we had the same call it birth plan, right? And the doctors and nurses were on board with it.
Yeah.
And all of that was good. And yeah, we learned some things on the second one. Cause like on the first one, you had a complication with your IV.
Yeah.
Like they kind of put it in a really tough spot on your arm where you couldn't really move around to the different positions to progress the pregnancy. So I guess like for people listening, like I feel like maybe generally speaking, hospitals think most people will just, you know, lay on the delivery bed and just wait for the pregnancy to progress. But like, I think as we saw it, to progress the pregnancy naturally without any like Pitocin and without anything like, you know, just trying to get the baby to progress, like you kind of have to move around and get into like all these different positions to kind of feel out the progression stages. And wherever they put this IV, because like, I guess there is a good thing to have the IV just in case you need, you know, you need different things administered. So you need it, but like, you know, putting it in a more accessible spot on your body to give you more range of motion and movement was really important. And I think we didn't know that with Harry, obviously. And that's why you had that really scary incident where it like hurt your arm and you were like bleeding for a while. This time we didn't have that with Wesley because we were thinking about all those little details.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually liked my doctor the second time around more because I felt like she had more bedside manner, and maybe it was just because the first one was so busy. Like you said, there were all these women giving birth at the same time that day.
That's what it felt like.
But like she, you know, she spent time with us and then she came in a few times to check in cause I wasn't progressing. And then she was really respectful of me saying I didn't want Pitocin and then making suggestions of, okay, like you've been here for 12 hours now. We could try breaking your water, like that.
It felt like
nice.
She was more patient even in the final stages of pushing.
Yeah.
Like she was very encouraging and patient.
Yeah.
And just like kind of letting you have your time.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the first one, and again, like this might be because literally everyone was about to push babies
he's
out.
Like, I got
to
catch one here, I got to catch one there.
Yeah, he's like, he's probably thinking like, oh, I got to go 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 5 minutes there. Right?
Yeah.
So it could have been that, but yeah, it definitely felt like the first one was like a little bit less paced.
Yeah.
And the second one was like, you know, once you were ready to push, it was very good bedside manner, very encouraging tone, no rushing, just kind of letting things play out.
Yeah.
And then I think Wesley was bigger, right? He came out bigger.
I
so
could
you
feel
had
it.
To.
As soon as I pushed, I could feel that he was bigger.
Yeah. So I definitely noticed that you had to push a little harder.
Yeah.
With Wesley.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we talk to people and people generally will tell you the second one just like shoots right out, right? So in my head, I'm like, oh, Wesley's just going to shoot right out. But no, he took more effort.
Yeah.
So
I
could see it.
I remember when I was pushing him and I remember this really big push I did and I was like, oh no, that was all the effort I had expelled on Harry.
And Wesley's
so
still stuck.
So now does that mean I can't get him out and I'll need to get a C-section or like... do I just need to keep pushing like this much?
Right.
Yeah. I remember thinking about that when I really pushed really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I was worried about you a little bit because you definitely had to push like several more times than Harry from what I remembered. But
yeah,
thankfully, once again, Got him out. Number two.
When they put him on my chest, I felt the weight difference immediately. I felt like they knocked the wind out of my chest when they put him on my chest.
Yeah.
So how did you think our postpartum with Harry was? Or how was postpartum for you the first time around?
My experience with Harry postpartum versus Wesley postpartum was very different. And I think one part, you know, one aspect of that was just that, like, obviously Harry was our first one, so we didn't know what to expect. But I think the other part of it was, at least for me, on the career side, I had just started a very demanding job at a startup right around Harry being born. And I felt very like conflicted with my time management around, you know, how much I gave to the work versus how much I spent at home and helping you and taking care of Harry. And I think everything was just a little bit like frantic and rushed. And I just don't think I was like in the moment as much with Harry. If you kind of imagine like those animation flip books, right? I feel like the first few weeks of what I remember with Harry postpartum was like a less fine flip book of like memories versus with Wesley. I think it was a little bit more relaxed just in terms of, I mean, we had Wesley still during...
Starting the reopening time.
Yeah, starting the reopening, but you know, most people were spending a lot more time at home. People were still at best in a hybrid commuting work schedule. Whereas with Harry, that was like a year before COVID ever happened. And it was just more like, you know, how work and life was before COVID.
Yeah. So
there was definitely more time at home. And I think it helped me, it helped me be more connected to everything going on at home for the first few days and weeks. And I guess, you know, adding to that was much less stress with Wesley because we went through all the motions with Harry.
Yeah.
And we kind of had an idea of what to do and what to expect. By the time we had Wesley, I had, you know, had learned to like balance time better between family and work. And so I think, it was more natural to like accommodate Wesley into the family because we had already like worked through like some challenges and stuff with how to like, how we could each take care of Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think is your parenting style?
Probably 70, 80% fun, more like I'm their friend and like a fellow jokester. And then the other 10, 20%, I'm like pretty stern.
Yeah.
I can be pretty stern. I can be pretty demanding and I can be pretty harsh, but I try to, I try to balance it.
How did growing up without your dad after 8 years old impact the way you view fatherhood and raising your sons?
Yeah, I guess long story short, for those who don't know me, which is most of you listening, my father passed away from cancer when I was 8 years old. So my kind of childhood, you know, from 0 through 8 till, and then from 8 till like adulthood, that was, you know, a very different set of chapters of my life because I guess I kind of remember how my dad was up until I was 8. And then afterwards, like, you know, my mom didn't end up remarrying. So it was kind of just like a very tight nuclear family with, you know, my mom, myself, and my sister who's 7 years younger than me. So I guess when I think about like parenting and being a father, I don't really have like memories of you know, my father after the age of 8. So in that sense, like, I don't have like necessarily reference points for how being a father was from my own childhood. Once, you know, I guess once Harry hits the age of 8, like, I don't really have like similar memories to think back on in my own experiences. But I guess what like I kind of think about with my own experience is like life is really precious and you never know what things can happen to, you know, affect, you know, kind of how long you're going to be around. So yeah, everything's like a little bit more urgent when I think about the important things that I want to do, like whether it's like with you or with our kids, you know, just kind of like being more appreciative of all the time that we have together and not necessarily like needing to wait for certain time periods of our life to like try to, you know, try to like have experiences that we think are important.
Makes sense. Are there any fathers that you know who have older kids that you look up to? As like you would say, oh, I would love to have that relationship with my kid when I'm that age and my kid is that age.
Yeah. So I guess even, you know, even though I didn't have a formal father in my life as a teenager, I definitely had like examples of father figures and people doing things that like I look up to them because they impacted me when I was growing up. So I think about, for example, some of the friends that my mom had, like other families that we grew up with, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes their fathers would take me fishing. So I kind of appreciated some of the father figures in my life, like the folks that took me fishing, the folks that took me to get my first like interview outfit for a job, or for, I think for my the scholarship that I got going to college. Like there was a guy at my church who took me to get my, my suit. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I definitely appreciate the moments where people kind of stepped up in my life and kind of acted as father figures.
Yeah.
I guess those highlight, you know, some of the moments where I definitely want to be there for my kids, but even like more broadly, like for people that maybe we come into contact with through our lives that might need a father figure as well. Like I kind of think about those moments as like impactful to me and, you know, to the extent that we can do that for other people, I think it's nice too.
Yeah. How has your perspective of me changed or not changed since I entered motherhood?
I mean, I think very little has changed. Like I really, I think that.
What do you think very little has changed?
No, like my perspective of you hasn't changed because you're kind of the person I thought you were.
Yeah.
I remember like the first Thanksgiving you took me to with your family. It's like so crazy that you had this huge, you know, this huge family. And it was so different than the family I grew up, like I grew up in, but I could tell that like some, you know, some similarities and many similarities existed that I was looking for someone who was family oriented and, you know, cared about that aspect. And I felt like, you know, you would be a good mother just based on getting to know you over time. And nothing's really surprised me too much, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing's really surprised me too much. And I think, you know, as we've like kind of figured out our roles as parents, like there's a lot of things you do that are really complimentary. And if I tried to do those things, it would be, you know, more of a struggle for me. So I think it's like there's some things that are coming very natural to you that you do for our kids, and I appreciate them. And the things that like I wouldn't do as well. So
what are some things you would not do?
Like be so good about taking them to the library every other week to check out like 20 books. Like I enjoy reading the books that you guys bring back, but I don't know. I'm just not that person that's like every 2-3 weeks I'm going to take them to the library and like refresh all the books. Oh. You know, it's just, you know, like that, that
you
is,
don't do that. You didn't do that as a kid.
I did that myself.
Yeah.
But that was like way later in my life. Okay. Like not when I was three, like no one was taking me to the library to get books when I was three.
Okay.
You know, like,
well, you weren't in the US, so maybe you didn't have books.
No, I came to the US when I was three.
Exactly.
That's when I said that. And it wasn't until like probably somewhere in the middle of elementary school that I think, yeah, I kind of had a natural interest in books and I go to the library, check out things and, you know, obviously take the, what is that? They give you a chance to buy a bunch of books every year. What is that called?
Book fair.
Book fair. Yeah. Book fair. And then I would give that to my mom and tell her like, you know, I want these books.
Yeah.
I want those books and then see what I end up with. Right. But like, it's really nice that you started this, you know, habit with them so early.
Yeah.
And I think it's really great.
They love it.
Yeah. They love it. And I think it's really good. You know, you're always looking for ways to kind of enrich their experiences beyond the normal, you know, day-to-day stuff. So I think it's really great.
What were some of our toughest points once we entered mother parenthood?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was basically that initial weeks and months transition post, you know, post having Harry.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was exacerbated by me trying to balance like a challenging, but really like I really enjoyed the experience and the responsibility I was given, you know, at that new job. It was me trying to balance all the pressure of that, you know, of that new job and kind of being there in the right way for you and Harry. I think we had to work through that. And there's things that, you know, I definitely could have done a lot better in hindsight.
Yeah.
But just kind of like figuring out our roles, figuring out how to be there for each other and me learning how to do that better. I think that was like probably the toughest time.
Yeah. And I think that couples generally need to normalize that there's going to be a storming phase with the introduction of a new roommate.
Yeah.
So I don't think a lot of people prepare for like, how is your relationship going to change with your significant other? You think about how great we're going to be as a family and how much fun we're going to have and how happy you are that this baby's coming, but you don't think about how there's essentially a whole new set of responsibilities and this whole other thing that has survival needs first and then like social needs later. Well, actually pretty quickly as well, but I feel like Harry needs like more social needs than ever at this point. So I don't think people really think about that phase of postpartum.
Yeah. And I think it's one part kind of that. And then like one of the things I liked about you when we first met was in addition to being, you know, having good values and being family oriented, like you also were very like motivated, you know, from a professional perspective in your career. And I think like when there's that dynamic that we have in our relationship around like career being important for both of us, that adds to the tension if you're not able to manage it well enough. And if you're not communicating those kind of things.
Yeah.
And so I think like that was maybe even additional like tension, right? Because like some other couples may have one person that is more professional and career motivated and the other one's not, and they're fine with that. But then like, I think our dynamic is like also that we both really do care about our careers too.
Yeah.
And we want to have a good family and all of that. So we kind of just want everything.
Yeah.
And it's harder, right?
Yeah.
Because then you have to figure that out because there's basically less wiggle room the way I think about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You need to have like a really efficient plan,
yeah,
you know, to get through the week. And then you need a lot of help too. Right.
Yeah.
So then like, you know, it's really great that we have your parents close by and they love their grandkids and they're a huge help, right? And it's really nice to have that because then that allows us to have kind of more time for all the things we also care about beyond our kids.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the things we do are like test and learn. Like just when you think you figured out the recipe, something new happens or something changes or one of them needs to move to a new school. And so like you're just always going to have to change and it's always the seasons of your family. It'll just continue to happen until they're older, they're out of the house, you know.
And I think one thing that further made it challenging when we first had Harry, and I guess to a similar extent even with Wesley, but you know, we were a lot better about knowing what to do and all that, was like I didn't really have paternity leave.
Yeah.
Right? Like I left IBM, which had a really great paternity leave policy. And I worked for a startup and that's not like a formal benefit. I didn't feel like I had the space to ask for or enjoy kind of a paternity period the way that, you know, I otherwise could have or would have if it was like a formalized benefit. And I look back in hindsight and that's something that actually would have been really important to think about from a family planning perspective.
Yeah.
Like if you guys know you want kids, then ideally you're working somewhere at the time you actually have kids.
Yeah.
Right. At a place that has a good paternity policy. And I kind of actually was literally that window of years that I didn't work at a large company that had paternity benefits. That was the window we had both our kids.
Yeah.
So it's really, really unfortunate and ironic, but I guess I can share it with the audience here and they can learn from, you know, things that maybe, again, in hindsight, I would have been better prepared for it.
Yeah. I feel like that is not top of mind for men unless they know they're going to have kids within like the next year or their wife is already pregnant. I don't think a lot of men think about, oh, does this job offer paternity leave?
Yeah, I think like I was not thinking about that anywhere near the top of the evaluation sheet in terms of like what job I wanted to take or what job I wanted to be in. It'll probably facilitate less stress and tension with your partner if you actually just have paternity benefits. It's like amazing.
Do you have any other additional advice for our audience members, any partners or support people listening?
I guess a few things would be like, obviously, as the partner, not the one giving birth, there's a lot of really cool things you can do to support your partner, and you can be as involved as you want to be. And I think, you know, being more involved is pretty cool, and it was a good experience for me. So on that side, I highly recommend it.
Do you think there's a reason why some men are not so involved? Do you think it's intimidating? Like they're
maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe some people just can't stand the blood and the, and just gets, you know, like obviously if that kind of stuff makes you pass out, then you'd be even less useful in a passed out state than if you just were in another room. But if you're not like that, then yeah, I think it's kind of, it's just kind of a moment that you don't want to miss. So might as well be more involved.
Thank you for joining today on my show. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts and your perspective.
Thank you for giving me the honor of doing it. I enjoyed it.
I hope you all enjoyed my chat with my husband, partner, baby daddy. Jing always believes in me when I need it most, and I honestly couldn't have done my natural labor and delivery without him. I'm really proud of the parents we're becoming and how our relationship has evolved. For more information on articles related to motherhood and things you can do as a support person, please check out www.amaandco.com. See you next time.